Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Gym Class All-Stars, as always brought to you by the Vigit Sports Betting app, where you can bet free coins, win real prizes. Download Vigit today using our promo code All-Stars. All right, lots to talk about here for the world of sports. Back a little bit into the week here. Wanted to let some NBA series conclude, had some basketball to play ourselves. We're going to start, however, in the world of football. The most important thing that we can bring to you is that last week we announced that Julio Jones had requested a trade, essentially on national television, when Shannon Sharp called him out of the blue. And I think we reported that the Titans were a team that we thought could happen, but we're like, hey, it's probably not going to happen. But lo and behold, Julio Jones has been traded to the Tennessee Titans for a slew of draft picks headlined by a second rounder. First off, who do you think won this trade in terms of, you know, talent versus draft capital?
This is always tough because football is tricky with salary cap implications, but Titans are getting a star wide receiver, one of, if not the best wide receiver in the league, and that's obviously debatable. But you're pairing him up. You got a pretty, I'd call it a juggernaut of an offense. You got Derrick Henry, you got A.J. Brown, and now you have Julio Jones. You have a pretty decent line. You got Tannehill, who is definitely a serviceable QB, if not cusping into that, like getting better with age. They look good. I think the only real question mark is their defense from last year. They had a great defense when they made the AFC Championship run. Last year, not so much, but they have definitely put themselves in a position to be very competitive this year. Honestly, depending on how their defense is, like they could be on par with the Bills even.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the defense is now the big question mark because this offense is elite. I mean, you have A.J. Brown and Julio Jones now as the receivers. Derrick Henry is the running back. And like you said, Tannehill, it's nothing to be scoffed at in terms of quarterbacks. It's going to be tough to beat this team. I mean, because even if you're able to score on their defense, they are probably going to be able to score right back on you. How do you beat that? Well, you know, defense is going to be the story against this team and for this team moving forward. So it'll be interesting to see what they do there, because the fear becomes that, you know, Julio Jones just went to the slightly better version of the Atlanta Falcons over in the AFC.
Yeah, I think the big thing though, and this is always why it's tough, because you see everywhere, like, why couldn't a team give up a second round pick and a fifth round pick for Julio Jones? That sounds like, that's asinine. The fact that they won't even give up those kind of assets. When you think about it though, Julio Jones, I think he's got 1 year left in his contract. He's going to warrant big money. Can your team sustain that? Like, I would love if Julio Jones went to the Eagles. Sure. But then the Eagles would just probably foreclose, quite frankly. With this though, the Titans have done a bit of restructuring. I think Tannehill has restructured his deal to fill up 15 million cap space, give or take. So they're preparing to sign Julio to a long-term extension. While, you know, we'll see if that ends up getting done before or after the season. I'd imagine after. But that was the big thing. You have to be able to commit to it. Otherwise, 1 year of a guy for a second round, a fifth round pick isn't going to do a whole lot unless you win the Super Bowl. And even then, if you win the Super Bowl, you might as well sign him again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're talking about the Eagles signing him. They signed him. They're going to have to mortgage off Lincoln Financial Field. But yeah, no, that's the big thing. Like you said, they're trying to make some room to re-sign Julio. Julio, you know, who knows how much longer he has left. He's dealt with injuries in his past. He's been here for a little while, though. But still, like you said, a top-caliber receiver. If he's not top three, he's still top five in terms of best wide receivers in football. Regardless of what they have to work with on the other end of the field, I think it's a really good move for the Titans, because now you're talking about an offense that really is towards the same caliber as that Kansas City Chiefs offense in the AFC. And you know how important that can be. So if they can keep pace in a shootout, you know, Kansas City's defense isn't the best either. That could be kind of what the Titans are trying to go for at this point. But yeah, that's the big news in terms of Julio. Tennessee, you know, moving over to the AFC, is going to have some fun bouts there. A little bit more for the NFL here, as, you know, some news is going to start picking up again and getting closer and closer to the season starting. Aaron Rodgers, though, not going to be attending the Packers mandatory mini camp. This was probably to be expected for the most part, given all the drama that's been going on with him. At this point, I assume the circumstance is going to be he just holds out and doesn't play this year, but I want to hear your thoughts on what you think is going to happen with Rodgers.
I have to grumble a bit because I don't know the answer. It kind of seems like with reports that like Davante Adams, for example, is in Rodgers' corner and will scream off the mountaintop in support of him. There's definitely some players backing him. And I kind of think management will end up caving to his demands or whatever he wants. You know, you can argue whether that's a good or bad thing. And that's, you know, for you to decide. But if you're the Packers, you should 100% want Aaron Rodgers back. And you're going to need Aaron Rodgers back. Because otherwise that team, they've had some pretty nice successions at quarterbacks. Going from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers, like, didn't really miss a beat there. But I don't think Aaron Rodgers or Jordan Love or whoever you're going to throw in there is going to be as smooth. So I don't know. It really depends how stubborn their owner is, quite frankly, because Aaron Rodgers retiring, like, it's going to be, you know, a super impactful, massive story. But Aaron Rodgers kind of has it set up. Like, he seems to be enjoying life outside of football, whether it's hosting Jeopardy, going to Hawaii with his fiance, things like that. Like, the guy seems to genuinely be content. And, you know, that's, as an owner, that's kind of scary, because when you got nothing to lose, like, he has definitely has enough money to retire easily. Mm-hmm. Why not just go in your passion projects? Other than, like, Aaron Rodgers seems to be that type of competitor who's like, I want to win more for the city of Green Bay. And, you know, that is something super important.
I will see. I think it also has to do something with the fact that, like, if he really, really wants to cement himself as a top tier quarterback of all time, like, another Super Bowl has to happen. Because if you can get past that echelon of only having one, then you're in multiple Super Bowls. That's a different conversation. But right now he's sitting at one. He's only made one. I mean, he's obviously got the stats to be one of the best of all time, but he only got to one Super Bowl. I hate comparing everyone to Brady, but if Brady's going to be the standard, like, he's got seven. Peyton Manning even has more than Rodgers. And I would say Rodgers, I understand, but there's that difference from one to two feels like a lot. Cause it's not like you didn't just do it once. Almost like there's no by accident factor. If you've done it twice, then it's like, oh, you were one of the best to be able to have climbed the top of the mountain on more than one occasion.
Yeah, I get that. I think the one thing that kind of gets lost is he's been to four straight NFC championships, I believe, which it's not a good look, but that also, like, he has asserted his dominance year after year.
Sure.
I can't defend him all 4 years. This year I will defend him because he's by far the best player on that field in the Bucks Packers championship game. Like, the 49ers, Packers, like, they got ran off the field literally by Raheem Mostert. I know when the Falcons went to the Super Bowl, that was kind of it definitely wasn't four straight, because the Eagles Vikings was one of them, and the Vikings got torched. So good for the NFC North, I guess, in the end. But, like, when the Falcons went to the Super Bowl, same deal where the Falcons just destroyed them. And I don't know if it's coaching. I don't know if it's underperforming, underachieving, but the Packers defense has always been kind of shitty. And
yes,
while Rodgers complains year after year about the receiving core, other than Davante Adams, the defense has always just been lackluster, to say the least.
It lets them down every year. It's never Aaron Rodgers' fault that they don't go to the Super Bowl. It's usually on the backs of the defense.
Yeah.
Either way, the Packers have some things to figure out here, because we are moving forward with Love. That's a different scheme than moving forward with what you've been used to for the last, decade plus with Aaron Rodgers. So some retooling to consider, both in the front office and on the field for Green Bay. One last thing here for football. A Tom Brady rookie card sold for $3 million. Yes, a piece of cardboard with a picture on it, and I assume an autograph, and I would God hope a piece of a jersey, sold for $3 million. Can you imagine that? Like, this tiny little thing, $3 million.
I can, just because I've, you know, been in touch with sports cards, memorabilia, and that stuff does sell for a lot. $3 million is definitely a good chunk of change, to say the least. I don't know, it honestly may not even be a part of his jersey, because it was a rookie card, I'd imagine.
Yeah, if it was a rookie, you're right. Probably didn't even have a piece of a jersey on it.
That was too high a tech for them.
Yeah. But
who knows? I think another good piece of info, a little happier side. Greg Olsen's son, TJ, who's 8 years old, received a heart transplant. So he's looking for a donor, need a new heart, and got one. So that's a very good news. Definitely a good positive story to, you know, start your week.
Oh, yeah. Really glad to see that. You know, it's always nice to get to give that a little spotlight. Yeah. Seeing the kids doing well. We love that here. All right. A little bit more sports to get to now. Going back into playoff mode. We're going to hop to hockey onto the rink here as the playoffs are still progressing. One team has advanced to the semifinals. That would be Montreal completing what I believe is an NHL record 22nd all-time playoff sweep, this time of the Winnipeg Jets. Like I said, the first team to advance. Are they the favorites at this point? They've won 7 straight playoff games, clean sweep in the second round. I don't know. We're looking good.
From my understanding, it sounds like whoever wins the Avalanche Golden Knights series should be the favorites.
Okay.
Or the Lightning, for that matter. But the Canadians are definitely making a very strong case. I mean, it's utter dominance, and that's I wish I was more in tune with how, you know, NHL worked in terms of like days off and whatnot, but you know, being up 4-0 the series, you get off for however long because you got to deal with the other series finishing up. That's great, and I think that rest will benefit them, and we will kind of see from there. I mean, they'll play the winner of Avalanche or Vegas. That's going to be a very tough matchup, but the fact that they get a little bit of rest, it's going to benefit them in the long run, obviously. I just think from my understanding of it, the Avalanche should be the favorites, but the Golden Knights are giving them a real struggle. Yeah, that series is tied 2-2. So sorry to knock your socks off there.
No, you're good. You got two at first, finders keepers. But yeah, no, winner of Avalanche versus Las Vegas gets the Canadians. The Avalanche, number one overall seed, I believe, in all of hockey, especially with Pittsburgh now having been eliminated. So I believe they have the best overall record left. But yeah, the Knights are fighting. I mean, the Knights, ever since they've got into the NHL just a few years ago, have been this like scrappy, just fighting, kind of like surprise you with what they can do type of team. And that's kind of proving true to this point, as the Avalanche probably didn't expect this much fight. You know, it's the playoffs, you got to expect some punches, but 2-2 series tie, showing all the signs of being able to go to 7. Do you say it's probably what it is, but do you think the winner of that series is going to be the one to advance to the Stanley Cup?
I think the winner of that series will win the Western Division.
Sure.
Because in the East, you got the Lightning. They're playing right now. I think they will end up beating the Hurricanes. The Lightning
3-1 right now in the series.
Yeah, and they're playing tonight. Defending champions, I think that's going well for them. The other half of it too, which is interesting, Bruins Islanders. Islanders are up 3-2 on the Bruins. I believe they're going back to New York for game 6 because I think they're in Boston to start.
Yeah.
That one is tricky because the Bruins also seem like a great team. The Islanders, though, are one of those teams where if they can hang around, they have the sort of mental fortitude to kind of want to beat you at the end, like on a dumb goal, get shots on the goal, that type of thing. So Islanders seem like a little bit of a hot team too. I don't think either of those, the Bruins or the Islanders, are going to beat the Lightning. I think it's going to be Lightning versus, I'm going to say, the Avalanche. I know it's a very kind of cliche pick, but Avalanche they're kind of scary. They have to beat Vegas, but you know, Vegas has been good for the constantly since they became a team not too long ago.
Yeah, I agree with the fact that the Lightning are probably more likely going to run the table in the East. They look like the strongest team, like we said, up 3-1 on the Hurricane in that series. Hopefully for their sake, going to put them away. That Islanders-Bruins series has become very interesting. It was 2-2. Islanders take the lead. Now they're up a game. Islanders are the 4th seed in that little quadrant, and the Bruins are, if I'm not mistaken, the 3. So it's the 2 lower seeds, which I always love. But it's also really annoying to have to root for a New York team just because they're playing a Boston team. And I really hate that. But that's where we're at.
But also, I'd rather the Islanders, who have been miserable for like ever, would beat the Bruins 100%.
No, 100% I agree with you there. So hopefully that happens. I want to see Las Vegas continue. So I'm going to say Las Vegas is going to play the Lightning in the Stanley Cup. As to a winner of the Stanley Cup, that is probably beyond me. But in my unexpert opinion, I will say the Las Vegas Golden Knights are going to win the Stanley Cup.
We can't have Vegas winning championships quite yet. I can't live in a world where Vegas is like the party town and it's the sports capital of something.
The amount of alcohol that would be consumed in that town for
that would kill a large elephant, 100%.
A couple large elephants.
A couple, yeah, you're not wrong. A couple large elephants. I actually do though. If I ever get the chance to like party with an NHL team after winning the cup, I really just want to chug beer out of the Stanley Cup. That's all I want to do.
100%.
It's by far the best trophy for that reason.
I couldn't argue with you if I wanted to. That's our NHL update. Moving closer to
that is our NHL update. We've just said we like the trophy because it's a cup.
It's a beer chugging ornament. It's a fantastic tool for all of your frat boy needs. Please win a Stanley Cup for that reason. Any city near me. But that's what we have for the NHL. As we get closer and closer to the Stanley Cup Finals, we will continue to bring you updates on how the playoff schedule unravels. Now we got the beast of them all. That would be the NBA, of which a lot has happened since we've last talked. As this is, you know, it's over for me because the Heat lost. So I don't really have to sweat this one out. You, however, got some sweating still left in you. We're going to start with the Sixers and the Hawks both won their first round series in five. Embiid, little injury scare for the Sixers, got hurt in game four. Wizards ended up winning game four. If I'm not mistaken, Embiid did not play game five.
He didn't play game five, and the Sixers were able to win pretty handily against him, which was good.
Yes. And then Atlanta, after New York had tied the series at 1-1, Atlanta won the next three. Clean and easy. Trae Young looked by far like the best player in that series. Clint Capella was elite on defense.
Tom Thibodeau looked like the coach of the year, but we'll get back to that later on.
We'll circle around that. So the five versus the one in the second round between the Sixers and the Hawks. And the Hawks really came at the Sixers to start that game. It was close to a 20-point lead at halftime. They were really shooting well. They were playing excellent. Embiid played very well, but you could tell he wasn't quite 100%. The Sixers, however, fought. They got it to three at a point in the end of the game. They were down 10 with a minute and a half left, got it to three. But then Atlanta was able to, I think they got a three from Bogdanovich, and then they got a lob to John Collins that kind of ended it.
That didn't even end it, though. That's the thing. Like, that clip got shared around. Like, the announcer said the game's over, and they managed to keep it. They ended up losing by four. I know that because Tobias Harris went for a three at the end, missed it, and was looking for a foul, all that. But after that John Collins lob, they still had a chance to – like, they hit a three. No, what was – they stole the ball. They had a chance, and then they had a foul. But just multiple times, they actually had a chance to genuinely try and tie the game up. Like, that game was never out of reach until, like – the clock struck zero, quite frankly. Sure. But yeah, they played atrocious for the first three quarters. They didn't play great, but I will also give the Hawks every ounce of credit possible because they shot lights out from three. They were shooting, I think, for the entire game, like almost 50% from three, which if you're shooting at that high volume and you're making all those, yeah, you're probably going to win. And Trae Young looked like an all-star in that game. Which, by the way, I think we said in the show that like Ben Simmons is gonna make Trae Young like look like a little bitch. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness! That entire game was Seth Curry or Danny Green on him, and Danny Green got blown by, God, at least eight times in that game, and I was losing my mind watching it. Finally, they've wisened up a bit. I know tonight they're gonna be better. It was frustrating to watch. It was painful to be down like 25-30 most of that game. But that fourth quarter, that last like 6 minutes, goes to show you how good the Sixers are. If being down 25, they can make it a 4-point game. And that's after a a Joel Embiid foul on like an open lane, like, you know, foul John Collins from behind.
Oh, the clear path. Yeah.
Clear path. Yeah. I couldn't think of it. And then that's, you got all the threes they're making, Bogdanovich's silencer. And even then, even after Danny Green missing a three, they still had a chance to win. So I'm optimistic. I think it'll go to six though, because I will guess they'll win one in Atlanta, but I'm optimistic. I'm definitely not worried. If they lose tonight, I would be very, very concerned, but I don't foresee that happening. Good.
Sorry, I want to say this real quick. The Sixers are fine. I don't think they're going to in any trouble of losing this series necessarily. So sorry, that's why I got to the point of getting up here. The issue though was you got it. Like I said, you got it to 3 points. You were real close, and then you made one mistake. Doc Rivers took Matisse Thybulle out of the game and put Danny Green back in. Matisse Thybulle is, sure, years younger than Danny Green. Danny Green's a two-time NBA champion. He's been there three. He should know what he's doing, but the difference in pressure that Danny Green was putting on Trae Young than Matisse Thybulle was, I mean, Thybulle's poking at everything. He's forcing turnovers. But he's still also staying in front of him, sliding his feet, not giving Trae Young an inch. Danny Green can kind of poke the ball out from behind. Danny Green can kind of put his arms out, but Trae Young was getting by him really easily. And yeah, I understand that in the playoffs every year, Danny Green's mistakes get put under a microscope for whatever reason. But this is one of those choices that Doc Rivers is going to have to make, is if Seth Curry is so important with his shooting that you need him on the court at the end of games, you have to be able to understand who's playing better defense and who's playing the more important defense. And in that game, it was Matisse Thybulle. I think the Sixers have the best possible defensive lineup any team can put out with Matisse Thybulle on the court as part of it. But if you're not going to play that good of a defensive player at the end of a game that you fought so hard to get back into, and I think if I'm not mistaken, he shot better than Danny Green that quarter. It didn't quite make enough sense in my head.
He did. I'll give him that. Matisse Thybulle shot very well in that game. I think he made two threes, which is awesome to see, because Matisse isn't the best three-point shooter. I want to take that point and sort of transition to probably why. Being down like 5-7 points with that little amount of time left, you're going to try and make threes or go broke. And yeah, Matisse Thybulle is eons better than Danny Green at defense, but also Danny Green, assuming he's not horrible, Danny Green is the person you want on the court shooting threes. I know you want Seth Curry as well, but I think that's the reason for it. Granted, I don't know when the sub came in, because the Hawks burned their timeouts fast, because that was the whole thing, because they kept getting trapped and losing the ball and they couldn't call timeouts because they burned it so fast.
It was pretty much right at the end of that. You had either forced them into a turnover or forced them into a timeout, their last timeout, and then you took Thybulle out, even though Thybulle was the one putting on most of the pressure.
But that was the thing, where they probably were down like 5-7, so they're just like, we're going to go for threes, go broke. Sure. And they just didn't have the chance to make those subs. I could be wrong about that. I think just you need the sort of shooting in hopes that you're going to get there. But yeah, no one's going to argue Matisse Thybulle is a worse defender than Danny Green. No one will fight you on that. Even Skip Bayless wouldn't fight you on that.
Yeah,
right. If he knew who they were, to be honest.
God, but that man is a clown.
Right now, I got news. Joel Embiid is going to play in game two. So I'm not real worried. I just hope Atlanta doesn't come out shooting 50% from three. If we can avoid that, we will be fine easily.
Yeah, I might have to do something along the lines of Ben Simmons guarding their best player, but we'll see how that goes.
That's the problem. They lost by four in the end, but it was like utter incompetence with that defense. And that usually doesn't happen. I think they have it figured out now.
I saw a quote from Doc. It said he didn't want – someone like Trae Young is very good at drawing fouls, and he didn't want Ben Simmons getting in foul trouble, which I get, but still not an excuse for, like, the second half
or anything
like that.
And I think he knows that now, and hopefully tonight they don't get into foul trouble and they clamp him up, and we'll be good.
Yeah.
Now, the other side of the East. So I know you're mad the Heat lost. But honestly, you should probably be happy with the way the Nets are absolutely decimating the Bucks. These two games, first and foremost, game one, they lost James Harden within the first minutes.
No, the first drive of the game, the first layup attempt.
Yes.
James Harden got hurt. did not play the rest of the game, has not played the rest of the series since.
Yes. So that got hurt and they still won by, I think it was like 15, maybe 20, but they still it was an easy win. Game two, no Harden as well. The Bucks are actually the favorites. I think the line was -1. They were the slight favorites. Oof. 29, 30 point blowout. Like, God, just not a good look. The Bucks got killed. We talked about this earlier today. Actually, it was a 39 point blowout. I forgot. It was even worse. First and foremost, if Mike Budenholzer isn't fired out of a cannon by the end of game three, like, what are the Bucks doing? Yeah, like, fire that man. If the only thing I will say, you can keep Mike Budenholzer till the end of the series if that game is, like, reasonably close. You're not with the Bucks may genuinely get swept. I think they'll take a game at some point, but oof, the Bucks look bad. But is it the Bucks look bad or are the Nets just like really, really good?
Well, I don't want to discredit Brooklyn because this is, if I'm not mistaken, the most efficient offensive team in the history of the NBA. And if I'm wrong, they're second. They're one of the best offensive teams with or without James Harden, which is the scariest part. But man, okay, this is going to come with a bit of a caveat because I talked about how the Heat could beat the Bucks. Obviously, that didn't come to fruition. But clearly, it was because of the Heat's inferiority and not the Bucks' superiority. I'm about to rip into the Bucks here for a minute. Another Robcast moment. We'll take over. God, does this Bucks team unimpress me so much? First of all, the lack of, like you mentioned, Mike Budenholzer is clearly not the coach for this team. I mean, good God. You're down 20-plus points, and you're just like, cool, I'm going to play a 2-3 zone against the most efficient offense in the history of basketball, and I'm going to put Bobby Portis, 6'8" Bobby Portis, in the middle of that zone. He's going to be my rim protector. I have 7-foot mammoth Brook Lopez. I have freak of nature Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm going to put Bobby Portis in the middle of that zone. I'm going to put two tiny little, not very good defensive, you know, maybe Jrue Holiday, but like not great defensive guards on the wings to try and cover Kyrie, Durant, Joe Harris, Jeffrey, and all of this. Terrible coaching from Mike Budenholzer. Absolutely no depth on this team. Their bench was atrocious. I mean, they have Jeff Teague not even playing. They're playing Thanasis before they're playing Jeff Teague.
No, that's smart. Jeff Teague's a bum, and I will fight anyone on that. Come on.
Fine. No. No. I'm fine. But they still don't have much depth. They lose DiVincenzo. And their shooting guards are just non-existent. Bryn Forbes shot really well against the Heat. He's not really going to do that much against Brooklyn. I'll give you Jeff Teague. I don't need Jeff Teague.
Fine. Just like, okay, fine. Because you know, listening to that, like, okay, maybe Alex is right here.
I just, my real thought is like, you could shift Jrue to the two and you could put Teague in at the one and he could be like more useful than Pat Connaughton.
Maybe.
That's all I'm saying, but it's not a game changer by any means. And that's kind of what I'm talking about is they don't have that real game. They were all hyped on Bobby Portis because he killed the Heat, but Bobby Portis has never been a game changing player in his entire life. That's not what he does. He just gets hot and cold. They don't know how to play offense. Chris Middleton shoots some of the dumbest shots I've ever seen. I have a good buddy who lives here in Iowa City with me who keeps claiming that Chris Middleton is better than Paul George. He's claiming that Chris Middleton would beat Dwayne Wade in a game of one-on-one. And I'm just sitting here like, what basketball player are you watching that's wearing a Chris Middleton jersey? Because this dude, like, he was great against the Heat. Don't get me wrong, but last year against the Heat, he was terrible. And then this series so far against Brooklyn, he's been terrible. He's the guy that can keep pace with Brooklyn's style of offense, but when it's forced out of him like it's being because he's the only player on this Bucks team that can do that, it's going to bring up bad shots, and that's exactly what's happening. Brooklyn was ready for that, and they're forcing him into these more uncomfortable looks rather than the open ones that he's used to getting. Finally, it always comes down to basketball IQ. The Brooklyn Nets having multiple NBA champions on their roster, a great all-time, you know, he's in his first year, but Steve Nash is doing a pretty good job in his first year of head coaching. They have all of IQ in the world, and the Bucks have absolutely none. I mean, I'm sorry, but Mike Budenholzer has no idea what he's doing. Giannis is one of the most gifted athletes, probably the most gifted athlete we have ever seen in the history of basketball, sub maybe Wilt Chamberlain, and he doesn't know how to win his team a game. I mean, he could be dropping 45 like it's nonsense, but he doesn't have the intelligence to be able to lift his team up in the way he can lift himself up. It's the same issue they ran into last year, and it's the same reason why they're going home in the same round as last year. They are a better team than last year. Don't get me wrong, but this team with this coaching staff and this core is never going to win the championship.
Well said, Robert. I know part of that is a little bit of salt from losing in the first round, but like I said before, it's better than being utterly embarrassed by this Nets team. And what would have been funnier is if James Harden didn't get hurt, we could watch the Heat lose to, you know, a guy they could have potentially got if they were able to give up Tyler Hero. But that's neither here nor there.
Tyler Hero's so good. What do you mean?
I want to, if we ever do a theme song for this show, it's going to be Tyler Hero by Jack Harlow, 100%. Just so you can hear him say, I'm going to South Beach to fix my jumper. He needs a better, actually, you know, speaking of that, we have the bars. We make a song called Iman Shumpert. I'm going to South Beach to fix my jumper, something, something, Iman Shumpert. That's all right, bars.
You're on to something.
Bars.
That'll be the musical episode coming next
month. Yeah, we've decided, we did our life episode, by the way, if you haven't listened to it, go check it out. Our life episode did so well. We're just going to move into everything outside of sports. We're going to musicals. We're going to branded episodes. I don't know. We could do like a sci-fi opera next.
Hell, we'll be getting ourselves guest starring on Ted Lasso before you know it.
That would be a dream come true, quite frankly. I'd fly to England to have some biscuits with good old Ted. Also, if you haven't seen that, please watch that because that's hilarious.
Please watch that.
So that concludes the East, which is a mess. Now we get to the West, where it's going to be a lot of name calling. This is not going to be a fun time for everyone. Where do we start?
I want to start with LeBron so we can get it over with.
Okay, I was going to say that for last. But yes, LeBron James, in all of his glory, lost to the Phoenix Suns. And, you know, there's a lot of ways I could go with just rubbing this in your face. I think the best one is Michael Jordan didn't lose when he was this old, quite frankly.
Jesus Christ, what is that supposed to mean?
LeBron is in, like, the heyday of his career. He's still feeling good. You know, we talk about losses early in the career, not having help, you know, all that with Jordan, LeBron. But when Jordan got hot, Jordan didn't lose. And six finals, six wins. He wasn't losing the first round like some bum.
But he did.
Yeah, when he was like 23 and had no help. Sure, also,
LeBron's 37 and has no help.
Yeah, but Scottie Pippen was a bum, clearly, as you would say.
Of course. No, I truly hope all of my LeBron praise doesn't come off as Jordan slander, because that's never what it's supposed
to be. Yeah, it's never the case. We really do have to talk about the facts. There's a few things I want to touch on. Anthony Davis got hurt pretty early on. He got hurt, didn't play game five. They got blown out. Mm-hmm. Kind of, honestly, should have saw that coming. AD is slated to play game six. I think a lot of people in the world would thought this is LeBron's bounce back game. He'll drop 45. And, you know, we'll go to a game seven and kind of see what happens. AD got hurt fairly quickly in that game. I think it was five minutes. And after that, and even while AD was in, the Suns just went on a tear. Booker had 45, I think. Everyone was toying with LeBron and all that. There's a few things I want to say. First and foremost, I don't want to be that guy who say the fall off the cliff theory, but LeBron is not the same cold-blooded killer in the playoffs that we came to see in Cleveland, for example. Like in Miami, that was his prime and was utterly dominant and had teammates to back him up. We saw what he did in Cleveland effectively alone at times in like the NBA finals, like dropping like 45 and averaging a triple-double, god-tier type stuff. I really thought game six was going to be another one of that. Nope, not at all. It'll be a forgettable game in his career. We'll call it as is. You know, there's a point of like also in like psychology, not letting it get to you. Like I'm sure LeBron's obviously a competitor, doesn't want that to affect, you know, his health. But after the game being asked, like, you know, how does it feel? He's like, I'm just going to regroup with the Toon Squad this summer. God, give me a break. I hated that. And it set me ablaze for just multiple reasons. I mean, yeah, he can enjoy his like off season now, and I get that because he's getting old. Like, unfortunately, he does need to have time to recover. But God, just as there's a lot of LeBron stans that I know, and I'm not even gonna rope you in with that. But like, to see someone you've rooted for so much and praised to say that, like, ew. Just, yeah. I hate it.
You would hope he would have more constructive words than just, I'm going to take my summer vacation and I'll be back next year. But, like, I mean, that's the other thing, though, is as big of a LeBron fan as I am, this is a big negative on his career. This is the first time he's ever lost in the first round of the playoffs. He no longer has that over Michael Jordan. That's not a comparative thing anymore. This is something he's going to have to deal with on a mental state. Like, you know, he really is declining. This was, like you said, not the same LeBron James we've been accustomed to. This was a different version. The injury to Anthony Davis hurt, and I don't think anybody quite realized how good this Phoenix Suns team was until that first round series. Anyway, LeBron's got a lot of work to do still. You know, he's at this point where he's trying to definitively put himself as on top of the greatest players of all time list. He's never going to do that if he sits at four. Yes, he has to take this summer to recover. He had the short offseason last year. Take a longer offseason now, recover. But you got to have the attitude of coming back to win another championship. If you're coming back to just coast through the playoffs and make it as a seven seed again, man, you're not going to get to five. You're not going to get to six. You're not going to get past four. And that's where the argument of Jordan will always hold place. I mean, you know, he'll get to six and people will still argue Jordan. But that's what I'm saying, LeBron. Yeah, you really do have to take these things seriously because this was a tough loss for you.
And then after that, like putting on your Insta like a clip from Gladiator about like, you know, like I will be back and I will vanquish everyone. Like I don't buy that anymore. And if he does, like if he wins the championship next year, which I don't think he will, I think that's gonna be it's gonna ride on the coattails of AD to a degree. Like Anthony Davis clearly was the most integral part to like the Lakers. Like granted, LeBron won the MVP, the finals MVP last year, deserved it too. Mm-hmm. But without AD, he does not get that done.
You're absolutely right. There's no team that's going to be a LeBron James team that wins a championship and he's not the finals MVP, but you could still very well argue that Anthony Davis was the most important part of that. I mean, it wasn't just LeBron. It was AD looked just physically imposing on the Miami Heat last year in the finals. They didn't quite have that this year. Davis battled injury all year. LeBron had that late injury that clearly played some effect, you would assume, into at least the chemistry of everything. They didn't look like they were the best duo in basketball this year. They still may be, but it wasn't as dominant as it was the year before. Maybe it was the bubble, who knows, but this was, like I said, this was a bad showing for LeBron and the Lakers.
Yeah, and then on the flip side, we have the Suns. The Suns... great. At their first playoff victory in God knows how long. I think the last time they won a playoff series against the Spurs or the Mavericks.
With Steve Nash, right?
Yeah, like yep. It's been quite a while to say the least. Chris Paul, I thought he would play a little bit better in the series. He played fine. Devin Booker, though, showed up quite a lot. Jay Crowder kind of was the first and foremost, A1 trolling from Jay Crowder, salsa dancing into the game. You got Chris Paul doing the whole, like when it was LeBron on Jay Crowder and doing sort of the back down kind of thing. Like Chris Paul is doing at the end of the game. And what's Dennis Schroeder's trademark? He has something do you know what I'm talking about? There's some phrase that Dennis Schroeder trademarked. And all I know is Devin Booker on like Instagram commented that on, I don't know if it's Schroeder's post or LeBron's post. But just A1 trolling. That's tough. That's what it is.
We love trolling of Dennis Schroeder.
I will also say, though, like you had especially had high praise for how the offseason went in terms of what they assembled, like the Lakers assembled. I guess it was pretty bad. Also, I would like to take this time as sort of a passive Clippers fan to a degree because I like Kawhi to just bully Montrezl Harrell because, like, that's the only reason.
Trez was shitting on the Lakers too. I just think he's not that good of a basketball player, but I guess we'll see.
Montrezl Harrell is an explosive freak to that degree, but to me, nah, doesn't do a whole lot. He'd be good on the Clippers. I don't think he really serves a purpose in the Lakers now. Drummond
kind of. Yeah, I was gonna say with both of them, it's just what does one do that the other doesn't really do?
Yeah, I'd rather have Drummond just for a little bit more rebounding, and you know, he can kind of do the same thing, just not as explosive.
Allows AD to play more of a wing role. Yeah, I agree with that.
So that's that.
Yeah, and so, then so one up would be Portland Denver, which was a fun series.
Yeah. That first and foremost, game five.
Mm-hmm.
Damian Lillard dropping 55 and still losing. By the way, that's also that overtime performance when they're down by eight with like a minute left. Up there, Tracy McGrady's like point, you know, he's spurry. Dame Lillard is unbelievable. So they lost. They lost game six as well. We got it. So the one big thing was Terry Stotts and the Blazers parted ways, which we kind of knew was going to happen unless I would say won the finals, but I imagine it kept him if they somehow made the finals. That would probably would have been the only caveat. It was time to move on from Stotts. I don't think he's a bad coach by any means. I don't think he was the right coach, but I also think the way their team is assembled, I think they're missing something, and I don't think that roster is equipped to win a finals. So be it. But this brings into question Damian Lillard. What do you do from here? What do you do with him? And well,
sorry, go ahead.
The big thing was they gave the Blazers first and foremost were like, we're going to let you help us out with finding a new head coach. And he goes, I want Jason Kidd. And Jason Kidd went, nah. Immediately, like within a day, it's like, no, I love the Blazers. I'm not being their coach. And okay, I guess he's an assistant still in the Lakers, right?
I think so, yeah.
Huh. Well, that goes to show you how good the Lakers organization must be, I guess.
Well, I think part of it is because there seems to be some rumblings around the NBA that this is going to be a soft rebuild for Portland. Maybe not to the extent of trading Dame, but I've really heard the talk of CJ McCollum. I've heard also that he's almost a negative, not because of his play, but because of his contract. He got a pretty big $30+ million contract.
Yeah, so
it's tough for somebody who's not an all-star and not a great defender. The thing with that becomes keeping Dame happy, because the second Dame doesn't want to play in Portland, Portland loses all leverage with Damian Lillard. But the good thing for them is I don't think that's ever really going to happen. I think Damian Lillard wants to play in Portland. I have already heard these rumors that he's going to get traded to the Knicks or he's going to get traded to the Heat. And I'm sitting here like, okay, first of all, I'm not even going to listen to those two teams until free agency comes out, because they're always ridiculous with that. But I love Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum. I love them as a duo, probably my favorite backcourt duo in all of basketball. But I've never once for a second thought that that was a good enough best two players on a team to win an NBA championship. If it comes to trading CJ McCollum, it would hurt my soul to see him leaving with Damian Lillard. But if they can get enough back for it, the right pieces, I actually think it might be one of the best moves that roster could do.
Yeah, they honestly really need a good small forward. Nothing against Norman Powell, but I think they just need to upgrade in that department. Like, you have Covington as well. I think you could get away with Nurkic and Cantor, but it's kind of, they're missing something. Like, Damian Lillard, yeah, is obviously – he could be the guy on a championship team. CJ, I think, is – unfortunately, like a three, like in terms of ranking, like one, you need a second guy and then a third guy. And McCollum falls in that third guy spot. I love CJ too. And I would love for him to end up, you know, Philly would be kind of nice. Just putting that out there. But yeah, it's tough. Like, you don't really know what to do about it. And
I was thinking about who would be that slight upgrade from CJ that would really fit well in Portland with the current roster. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on what if CJ McCollum was Jaylen Brown.
So here's my thoughts on that. I think that is a great, that is like the upgrade they need. I don't think that wins them a title, but that's like the type of upgrade they need. I know, by the way, we probably didn't report this after the Nets beat the Celtics. Danny Ainge is like, He resigned. He basically was told to get the hell out. And then Brad Stevens is the president. Brad Stevens is now Danny Ainge. I don't want the Celtics to do well, but holy God, just you have a million assets accumulated. Use like some of them and go ahead and help your team because they quite frankly suck. But that's an aside. That's a good trade. I don't know if Celtics pull the trigger on that because they love Jaylen Brown. But Tatum, McCollum, maybe try and get trade Kemba as well and get a serviceable point guard. I think that makes the Celtics better. I think it 100% makes the Blazers better. It's going to come down to you can have Powell play shooting guard. That's actually a very good trade. I don't know if the Celtics would take it though. That's the only thing I would say.
Yeah.
The last piece I'll say on that, because I'm sure it'll heat up during the offseason. If Damian Lillard goes to the Lakers, I will stop watching basketball. That is my piece with it. I will never respect LeBron ever again. Just putting that out there. Because, oh my God, if I have to watch Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Damian Lillard on a team, I'm not watching basketball. That's
the best team ever assembled without
question. You could throw in a Marcus Gasol in the starting lineup, and it's by far the best.
You could throw you and me as the other two starters, and they'd absolutely cook.
That's a hand. I'd hand the ball off I'd catch the ball, pass it back.
Damian Lillard and I would become best friends, and I'm not even questioning that.
Damian Lillard would probably punch you in the chest, but we'll move on past that.
There is no question about that. All right. So, speaking of, though, so Nuggets ended up winning that series against Portland. They, however, did not end up coming up victorious in game one against Phoenix. Chris Paul kind of took over in the fourth quarter of that game. I think the final score is 122-105. So Phoenix up one game to none in that series. As great as Nick Jokic has been, and we'll get to him in a second here, and how well they've played since Murray's out, I think this is where their season's going to cap. I think as long as Chris Paul and the Suns stay healthy, they have one of the most talented rosters left. I mean, young guys like Michael Bridges and DeAndre Ayton have stepped up so much for them so far in the postseason. They, at this point, are probably my favorites to come out of the Western Conference. So as great of a story as the Nuggets have been all year, I think this is probably where their season is going to come to an end.
I would tend to agree. I think the only X factor in that series, like Jokic will drop 30 probably at nights because – DeAndre Ayton's okay, but he's not going to cover the MVP, Jokic. To me, I think the big X factor is like, what can Michael Porter Jr. do? And I know he can only do so much, but that may keep you in games and maybe win you a game or two. But I think you would need Jamal Murray in this case because the guards in Denver are lacking a bit. Like, Austin Rivers is good, but eh. So.
He also just got brought in. It's tough to be that impactful when, you got to go up against Devin Booker and Chris Paul.
Yeah, he's doing a good job. Don't get me wrong. Team. But, yeah, exactly. Like, Jamal Murray would be – you have Austin Rivers like, I need that good point guard, X factor. Jamal Murray is kind of the guy you need in that slot. But this is still a good season for Denver.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think Malone will get fired?
I think it's partially going to have to do with the fact that Murray was injured. So you don't really get to see how good this team was, especially in a year where LeBron wasn't truly competing in the West. I'd give it one more year with him. I was somebody who was during, if you guys can recall way back to the beginning of our show, when we were talking about Utah Denver last year in the first round, I was saying that if they lost that series, Mike Malone should be fired. They won that series. They went all the way to the Western Conference Finals. So now I'm on the boat of, okay, let's give Mike Malone the benefit of the doubt here. He's done a good job assembling this roster. I mean, Nick Jokic was the 41st pick in the draft, lowest drafted player to ever win an MVP. I'll get to that. We'll get to that in a minute. So he's done Murray was drafted. A lot of their core guys were drafted. It's really cool to see that. So I would give this guy the benefit of the doubt. And no matter what, if they get swept, I guess consider it. But I would give him at least one more year, especially if he's already under contract.
Yeah, I think with Murray out, you kind of have to give him another year. Then, so we talked about the Jazz Grizzlies last week. That was pretty uneventful. Like, the Jazz effectively swept the Grizzlies once Donovan Mitchell came back and Ja Morant looked good. There was a little bit too much slander I saw in the name of Kawhi Leonard. He airballed a potential game, I think it may have been game winning, game tying or game winning three. You gave him a lot of shit on Twitter. Not really, but you called him overrated, as a man who watched his team get single-handedly get defeated by Kawhi Leonard, I will tolerate none of it. Kawhi Leonard is the first player in playoff history to average 30 points per game in a series and shoot above 60%. Game six decimated. Game seven basically did the same thing. I give the Mavericks all the credit in the world. They looked significantly better than I thought. But game seven Clippers is like the essence of what I thought the Clippers should have been that whole series. I don't know if they'll be able to maintain it. That is a completely different story. Like, they're playing the Jazz, who are a very well-equipped team to handle that. But Kawhi Leonard is a scary dude, and please never forget that.
Won't. And I don't know if you'll believe me or not here, but I actually did expect them to win game seven. Basically, what happened was I saw that shot and I was like, wow, Kawhi Leonard, you're ridiculous. And then I saw this amazing stat that was, since joining the Clippers, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are shooting 14% on shots that would tie or win the game in the last minute of the game. And I was like, okay, that's pathetic coming from superstars. But then I really looked into it and I was like, God, as good as Luka is, he's only a game changer on offense. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, mostly Kawhi Leonard, because Paul George has his pandemic P moments. Kawhi Leonard is elite on both ends. He's a game changer on both ends. And I sometimes misunderstand how good Kawhi Leonard is at offense, because he is a top five player when it comes to offensive efficiency and offensive abilities. And I forget that because sometimes he just puts up really boring stat lines, and I don't like really boring stat lines.
But no one does.
You cannot discredit the things that don't go into the stat sheet for Kawhi Leonard, like defense that he plays, the aggressiveness that he brings, and the intelligence that he puts on the offensive side of things. We know about how great of a defender he is, but how smart he is on offense. A lot of teams have players that like to just kind of chuck shots every now and then. Kawhi Leonard doesn't let you do that. Kawhi Leonard doesn't let a player just kind of chuck a bad shot. If anyone's going to shoot a bad shot, it's going to be him. And it's going to go in because it's him. And he's just got this offense clicking in an interesting way, at least in game seven, like you said. So it'll be interesting to see if they can continue their success. Mike Conley for the Jazz, on the flip side of it, out for game one tonight versus the Clippers. So maybe something they'll be able to take advantage of, seeing that the main play initiator for Utah will be out. But yeah, no more Kawhi slander. I spoke my piece on Twitter, called him overrated. He proved me wrong, and that's all a man needs to do. I will always eat my words if I'm wrong. I will always be good about that.
I know Kawhi, like, we watch Kawhi Leonard, and Kawhi Leonard's I'd say a very good 3-point shooter. I will say, though, the more and more I watch him, the more and more he just reminds me, like, of the idea of DeMar DeRozan, in the sense that if he's within the 3-point line and shoots the ball, like, that is a swish and a make 100% of the time. He's automatic within the 3-point line. He can shoot threes. I'm not discrediting that, but just unbelievable shooting, like, from the foul line in. God.
Lethal.
So, you know, the Clippers played well in game seven. Paul George actually looked reasonable. Nick Batum put up some points. They had some help off the bench. Terrence Mann, Marcus Morris didn't shoot 17% from three. These are all good things the Clippers need. Steve Ballmer is still alive. He has not had a heart attack yet, which, you know, we're praying for Steve Ballmer in that sense, because I think his heart's going to give out at some point. Now, that's enough with LA. The Mavs. Yeah, Luka, like, looks like the next generation of star and will probably at some point be an MVP. Looked incredible. Tim Hardaway Jr. played out of his mind in this series, because I did not expect him to do anything, and he was making threes left and right.
He was great.
We got to talk about Porzingis.
Yeah, we do.
There were reports, I'm sure you saw them, that he feels mistreated in Dallas. He feels like he is not a focal point of the offense. And to that, I say, yeah, obviously. Go figure.
Why would he be?
Maxi Kleber looks like he's more deserving of your contract than you are. Porzingis has played awful that entire series. Just atrocious. The man is 7'3". I know he's battled injuries, and like, I will give him like that benefit of the doubt, but he is awful. He does nothing. If we're talking about CJ being overpaid, Porzingis is a dumpster fire. Like, you should just burn money instead. And I don't – the Knicks and Mavericks making that trade, the Mavericks should have went after Porzingis. Unfortunately, that is kind of a failure, and they should jettison him as soon as they can and see what else they can get. Because right now, Maxi Kleber seems like he can fill Porzingis' role without question.
Better. I have – never understood why people think Kristaps Porzingis is a good basketball player. He, like, I'm going to get mad because I hate Kristaps.
Let's just calm yourself for a second. I think in New York when he wasn't injured, there were signs that this, like, he was like Kevin Durant in the sense that he could shoot and was a little bit mobile. Like, there were definitely signs that he could be a literal unicorn, as his nickname suggests. Injuries have definitely taken him down a peg.
Correct.
Go on your rant, though, because it's not just all injuries.
No, the injuries aren't all of it, but you're right. They do play in a factor. But, man, first of all, it's all the time. Injuries all the time are a bad thing. Yep. Second of all, I don't get it. He's a good three-point shooter, and he's a good shot blocker. That's it. That's what he does. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't run the floor well, especially after all these nagging leg injuries. He can't guard the perimeter. He's not really an offensive weapon. I mean, he's complaining about how he's not touching the ball enough, not putting up enough shots. Sure, you're the second best player on the – I don't even think he's the second best player on that team, to be honest. But, like, man, why would they give you the ball if all you're going to do is put your back to the basket and throw it at the rim? I wouldn't want that person shooting the basketball. Hell, if that's what you did in rec, I would have never passed you the ball, and I would have been shooting 15% instead of 30%.
This is true.
But like, you know, I wasn't Luka Doncic, so I wasn't able to do that. I just don't get it. Kristaps is somebody that people love probably because of his name and the fact that he's this monster dude that can shoot and because he started his career in New York. But, yeah, you talk about overpaid players, and he's on the top of that list of one of the most overpaid in basketball right now because his impact in that series was felt so minimal. I mean, the Clippers were starting 6'9" Marcus Morris at center. The Mavericks are starting 7'3" Kristaps and 7'4" Boban. And Kristaps looks just as effective as Boban, who is, as we know, as great as he is as a person, not quite that great of a basketball player. And they both looked like they were having about the same impact, which was minimal to none. And that's not what you should be getting from someone being paid $25+ million a year and who's claiming he deserves more shots within the offense.
You know, going back to McCollum, I think a good place for him to actually end up would be Dallas just for shooting. I mean, McCollum wouldn't have the same impact because Luka kind of does everything, but that tandem would be interesting and maybe Porzingis would be revived. I think Dallas want to shoot themselves in the foot in terms of cap space, but it's a whole different issue. But McCollum, you trade McCollum for Porzingis and the Dallas probably has to throw in a million picks to make that worthwhile. Yeah. But the Trailblazers get their center of the future and we call it a day. And Damian Lillard goes to Lakers. That's kind of how that ends.
I'd almost rather have Jusef Nurkic than Kristaps Porzingis. Like, I understand I'm very harsh on some players. Obviously, Harden, one of them. Kristaps, clearly another one. But, God, I don't see it. He's not a good rebounder. And that's the biggest thing. You know, the tallest player is rarely ever a great rebounder. That's pretty true throughout history. But, all right. Put your hand down. I understand you were a great rebounder. That's fine.
Wasn't always the tallest person in the court, though.
But like, I see games, yes, exactly. I see games where Kristaps has like 5. And from a 7'3" basketball player, that just feels like not okay. Like, that feels like he should minimum be grabbing 8 a game. And like, even 10 a game feels like it should be the minimum. He's not an aggressive basketball player for how big he is. And I understand your size can be a little scary sometimes, but you see how physically dominant Giannis Antetokounmpo is just because of how big he is. Kristaps isn't quite that athletic, but he can dominate in certain ways with that physicality, and he just doesn't seem to use it for whatever reason. I don't know if he's scared of injuring himself or he really just doesn't have that second gear, but he's never shown it to be able to take that stride of really aggressively trying to lead your team, you know, through tough spots.
Kristaps, how many boards do you have? 5. Wonderful. Ghost on the bench. Here's another question though. I don't think he's getting fired because I think Mark Cuban has spoken out that he wants to keep him, but like Rick Carlisle, he's been there since they won in 2011. He's been there, you know, forever, it seems like. What do you do with Rick Carlisle? Do you keep it? Like, is it Rick Carlisle's fault? I think he's a very competent coach.
He's had his ups and downs the last few years. Obviously, having a player like Luka, it helps a lot. I would give him one more year, at least for the sake of, I actually don't think this roster is very well constructed. I think it's very well constructed for players who want to play Luka's style of basketball, which is all offense. And what's the other side? I don't know. But I think if they could retool the roster a little bit and give Carlisle one more real chance to prove that, like, I can still build a championship contending team, because they're at that point where they have that player. They have a superstar talent that can truly lead them. I know he hasn't made it out of the first round yet, but I do believe in the right situation, Luka will make it out of the next, yes, the first round next year, or very soon, if not. And whether or not Kristaps is the next best player for that team, you can move him or retool the roster however you need to. That if you can add a little more defensive versatility being a big thing, I think Carlisle is still good enough coach to make a good run. I'd trust him. I mean, he had that Mavericks team. When that Mavericks team is a little underrated in terms of things, but still absolutely upset that Miami Heat team back in 2011 under Carlisle. I don't know if you want to argue that Luka Doncic is better than Dirk Nowitzki quite yet, but that similar of a talent, I think he's got a real shot. And I think he's got a better shot of any new person you're going to bring in right off the bat.
Agreed. And yeah, Luka obviously hasn't made it the first round yet, but losing in six to a better Clippers team and then losing in seven this year, like, give him some time. And what, he's 23? Is he 22? He's super young. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of years left behind him.
Plenty of time.
So then going off of that, we have Jazz Clippers first round. Who makes it to the Western Conference Finals?
If it's the Clippers team that we saw in Game 7 versus Dallas, the Clippers. And if Mike Conley doesn't play much of this series, it'll also be the Clippers. Not saying Mike Conley is a huge, huge impact, but your starting point guard always pays dividends when he's out. That being said, Utah's chance of winning the series is, can Donovan Mitchell be as efficient as he's been all year with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George guarding him? My instinct says it's not going to happen. My instinct also says Rudy Gobert is going to have the most minimal impact on this series as possible if they're going to continue this Marcus Morris, Nick Batum starting front court situation.
That's what bugs me. Like, the center should be dominant. I know, like, in the NBA, like, the athleticism is ridiculous for some of those guys who are still, like, 6'8", 6'9". But, God, like, Gobert should have a field day with them to a degree. And he's not going to. You're 100% right. He'll have 10 points a game, maybe.
Yeah, that's the difference with, like, Embiid or Jokic. Is Embiid or Jokic could dominate Marcus Morris on the offensive side of things and go for 20, 30, whatever. Gobert maxes out at, like, 16 points. And lots of those points are putbacks or just little gimmies at the rim. They're not, like, your star player getting you a bucket. He can't take advantage of that short lineup quite like another star center can. That's the thing. If that's your second-best player having a minimal impact on the game – and, you know, Morris isn't going to be in the paint much. It's not going to be much shot blocking. Gobert's going to be pulled out. You either have to play a zone against a great shooting team or you have to pull Gobert out. And you don't want to do that because Gobert's a game changer on the glass and on the board and blocking shots. But if the Clippers are smart enough, they can take him out of the game. And I don't want to say it's going to be a short series by any means, but the Clippers could dominate the series given that.
I got to go with the Clippers winning the series. I know it's not going to be a popular pick, but if the Clippers can show any semblance of Game 7, I think they'll be fine. I think it's going to be a 6 or 7 game series, though.
Yeah, and then I'll say 6.
We'll find out. That one's going to be interesting. I'm going to need a little bit of time to sort of analyze that because I could go either way. If the Clippers can play up to their potential, I think they should win. But also the Jazz are – stacked enough where, you know, they could get away with some things. Like, they actually have a bench, which is kind of nice.
They're a pretty deep team. Speaking of, let's get into the awards here now. Yeah, as we have, I believe, 4 major awards have been announced at this point. 5th minor award. The ones that have not been announced yet are the Rookie of the Year and the Defensive Player of the Year. Obviously, we'll let you guys know when those get announced. But you mentioned the great depth of the Utah Jazz. They had 2 players up for the 6th man of the year, Joe Ingles, along with Jordan Clarkson, who ended up winning it. Derrick Rose was the 3rd candidate. But Jordan Clarkson, the 6th man of the year. This was a runaway campaign from the beginning of the year. There was nobody that was really going to compete with him for this award. By far the most offensively efficient season of his career. He and Donovan Mitchell are lethal scorers in that Utah Jazz offense. So shout out to Clarkson. Not much to talk about on that one, though, because like I said, he was the favorite all year. Yeah, I don't really know who finished in second, but didn't really matter.
Probably Rose. I mean,
probably. The most improved player of the year went to the New York Knicks power forward Julius Randle. The first time All-Star had a spectacular year en route to getting the New York Knicks to the four seed in the playoffs. Their best team. Porter Jr. was one of the other guys up for it, and I'm blanking on the third nominee.
Was it Grant?
Yes, I think it was Jeremy Grant. Do you think Randle was the choice here?
I think so. I probably had said earlier that I thought Jeremy Grant should have been, you know, like was probably very early in the year that Jeremy Grant should be up for the award, and he was. Pistons just suck. The Knicks made the playoffs, and that seemed to be the basis of a lot of voting, which we'll get to momentarily.
Actually, no, we're going to get to that right now.
Okay, cool. So I can yell into my mic.
So the nominees were Monty Williams of the Phoenix Suns.
Quinn Snyder
of the Utah Jazz. And where we had projected would be Doc Rivers of the Sixers, it was not. It ended up being Tom Thibodeau of the Knicks, who, of course, ended up winning the award.
Cool.
I'm just going to let you go here. You texted me right away when you heard about it. I can see you. You're gearing up for this, and I just want to let you go. I just want to let you loose.
I know they want to give it to someone who took a bad team and made him a good team, but like Monty Williams took a Suns team that was, I think, in 10th place and made it to the bubble, but didn't make the playoffs. That team, a bottom feeder of a team, to the second seed and almost the first seed in the West. You could make an argument like, okay, Quinn Snyder took a decent team, made them like the best team in the West, which is very
best
important.
Team in basketball.
Yeah. 100%. In terms of record, we're not saying in terms of how far they'll go, but you know, that's important. Monty Williams has done so much to revitalize the Suns. I mean, maybe you could say that you thought the Knicks would be so bad this year that like it's impressive they won 41 games, but like Tom Thibodeau got bounced in the first round and in the East as well. I don't know. This bothered me. I thought Monty Williams was a shoo-in to win that. Like Doc Rivers, you know, having Tom Thibodeau or Doc Rivers is fine because the Sixers have always been pretty good. He just took them to the next level, kind of like Quinn Snyder did for the Jazz. But you gotta, Monty Williams seemed like the sure candidate. And if you go to like anywhere on social media or like Instagram, the same sentiment is echoed by a lot of people. So I don't know. That bothers me. They got bounced in the first round. I know it's a regular season award, but Tom Thibodeau, I also don't think is a great coach either. He just runs his players in the ground. So I'm done with my rant. I'm pissed off, but like, no, whatever.
It's a very good rant. It's a very fair rant. Because I mean, I'm in agreement with you. Like he was the four seed in an Eastern Conference where the only seeds that mattered were the top three. Those were the only ones that were really competing for anything all year and were able to really, I mean, like they were the four seed and they were like a game above 5 and 6. Like that's not that impressive. Monty Williams, I cannot understand why he didn't win the Coach of the Year. The Suns team got so hot at the end of last year because of the coaching that he was bringing to the table. You add Chris Paul, you add Jay Crowder, a couple other pieces, and you become the second best team in the Western Conference. I understand it's the regular season award, but you oust LeBron James in the first round of the playoffs. That person, in my opinion, deserves a little more than the guy who just kind of got to the upper echelon of the Eastern Conference. Tibbs, though, brings home his second Coach of the Year award, won one previously in Chicago, now here with the Knicks. We'll see how much further they're able to progress in terms of bringing in talent and improving their roster. And hopefully we get a more deserving Coach of the Year next year, but you didn't hear that from me. A minor award that was given out, Damian Lillard won the Teammate of the Year. The only reason I bring this up is because of this hilarious tweet that I saw. So Damian Lillard won the Teammate of the Year, voted on by players. Congratulations to him. Chris Paul finished second, as a lot of people I assume would figure. Udonis Haslam finished third and Kyle Lowry finished fourth. I just wound up Haslam, not because he's a Heat, but because Haslam finished third place for the Teammate of the Year in a year where he played a total of 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And in the only game he appeared in, got ejected.
Nice.
I just thought that was a fun stat to bring up. But Damian Lillard, congratulations on that award.
And then finally, we got to talk about the MVP. Nikola Jokic, as we've alluded to this entire podcast, MVP award winner, the lowest draft pick of all time to win the award. He was the 41st pick and he won it. Sixers fans are irate because they think Joel Embiid should have won it. I disagree with them because I'm telling you, just missing those many games didn't help. And even if you were like, yeah, I think Joel Embiid should have won it, I would make an argument that Steph Curry should have won it over Joel Embiid, just from the way he willed that Warriors team into the playoffs. And, you know, they lost in the play-in game. Okay, but you get what I mean. They were the 8 seed. In a normal year, they would have made it to the playoffs.
Sure. I mean, look, I'm not as mad as I actually thought I would be at the moment when Nikola Jokic was inevitably named MVP because of how well he did when Murray went down. We've talked about this a lot. They improved for whatever reason. So I'm not as mad about it as I could be. I still think that Joel Embiid is a better basketball player than Nikola Jokic. And that is what I will definitively say.
I don't disagree with that. I just think from a statistical perspective and like given the circumstances, like Embiid's got other people to rely on. Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris. Now, granted, without Embiid in there, they're a 500 team, yeah, and that's been clear with their record. But I just like the way Jokic played without Murray, who's also like a bona fide superstar. To me, I think that just warranted it. He didn't miss nearly as many games as Embiid. And
sure,
I also like Embiid will get MVP at some point. I'm almost sure of that. The fact Jokic got it, like I'm all here for. Like, you can't not like the guy, which is, you know, weird to say, even if you're competing against him. Like, I like Nikola Jokic. Yeah.
He's a very fun player to watch. He brings this like excitement to the center position that we haven't really seen. Like, Joel Embiid is like exactly what you expect the best center in basketball to look like. But Nikola Jokic, it's like, oh man, he's passing the ball. He's moving all willy nilly. He's flailing his arms around, but he's still putting up 30, 10 and 10. Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
So, you know, hats off to Nikola Jokic, the first Serbian-born player to ever win an MVP. He's not the only Nugget to ever win the award, right?
Name another Nugget has won it.
Oh, I was going to say, Alex English never won one, did he?
I don't think so. And Melo didn't win one when he was on it.
And Fat Lever never won one, right?
The fact we know who Fat Lever is saying a lot.
I don't know what you want. I know Earl Boykins got snubbed a couple times.
Earl Boykins never was snubbed, and you know this. He is the first Nugget player to win the award. So
cool.
So, makes sense because yeah, that franchise really has never had.
That wasn't the most impressive list we mustered up there.
No, God, no. The fact we got to Fat Lever is even impressive.
Hey, don't hate on the Lebs.
I'm sure he loved being called the Lebs when he was playing.
I hope he just was, and that I picked his nickname off the top of my head. That'd be great.
Yo, up, Lebs? Yeah. Nah, call me Fat.
call me Fatty Lebs.
Fatty Lebs.
But those are the awards that have been pretty given sure he's out dead so far. Is he? Oh, that's so sad. I don't want to make fun of a dead guy.
No, we need to look this up. I need to double check if Fat Lever's alive.
Guys, if I just made fun of a dead man, I'm really sorry. That was not what I was trying to do. I was just trying to have fun with a funny
boys, man. We're good. He's 60 years old. He's alive.
We're not canceled.
Do you know what his actual first name is?
Oh, it's not Fat.
It's not Fat. It's short for something else.
It's short for something what?
It's Lafayette.
Which I
think
that
is really funny because we hate Lafayette in this podcast, but go Fat.
One time I actually drove to Lafayette. I don't really know why.
How did you actually end up that far down 22?
I'm not entirely sure. I missed a turn at some point, but anyway.
Yeah, you did.
That's what we have for you in terms of the news and the awards that have been given out. Like we said, Rookie of the Year, DePoy, will probably be given out this week. So we'll get that to you on the next episode. And now for our next segment, we wanted to do something a little more fun, a little fresh. So we were thinking about some of the worst trades in the history of sports, not just basketball or football or anything like that, like across sports, some of the worst. We each brought in three, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
You want to start? What's one of these worst all-time trades in your opinion?
I'm going to start. So the big thing, like there is a ton of bad trades. I looked at it from the perspective of trades that are like foolishly stupid and, you know, some caveats in there. Some of that are obviously there's a ton of them. Six bad trades isn't going to do it justice. The first one I'm going to bring up is my honorable mention. Sorry, I'll do two here. But the Kings ransom trade, it's a great 30 for 30. I've never actually watched it, but it has a really good name, so I'd recommend watching it. Wayne Gretzky, probably the best hockey player of all time, played for the Edmonton Oilers, got traded to the LA Kings. So the trade details was Wayne Gretzky and two other players who I don't feel like naming for Jimmy Carson, some guy named Rusinski, the 1989 first round pick, 1991 first round pick, and 1993 first round pick of the Kings, and $15 million. Now you're probably wondering, why is that a bad trade? Well, trading the greatest player of all time in any sport, not a good look. And Gretzky certainly was not past his prime. He didn't win a title with the Kings, if I'm not mistaken. So I guess it worked out, but neither did the Oilers, and the Oilers are very meh. So that's the one I wanted to bring up. I think one that hasn't aged enough, but was definitely subject to a lot of scrutiny, DeAndre Hopkins trade. This one was a mess. This goes to show you how incompetent Bill O'Brien was. Basically, the Cardinals sent a second round pick, a fourth round pick, and David Johnson, who was not the David Johnson of like 2015, to the Texans in exchange for DeAndre Hopkins. And I think they got like a fourth round pick out of it. So you got Hopkins and a pick. That's a win for the Cardinals. And I'm sure they will keep using him because DeAndre Hopkins is one of those players who is one of the best receivers in football, if not the best. Always dominance. Let's just see if Kyler Murray can, you know, continue being proficient. So those are my two to start.
All right. I appreciate bringing in an honorable mention, and I can respect that. You know, trading Wayne Gretzky makes no sense, but whatever. All right. So I had one written down here about Antonio Brown trade of the Raiders. I'm actually going to skip that. I think it's a bad trade. Don't get me wrong, but I thought of one just now that I wanted to bring up. So I don't know how closely we follow prospecting for baseball. It's not something I've ever followed too closely, but living with lots of baseball fans, I learned about it. And when I was living with them, one of the craziest deals happened. So this was, if I'm not mistaken, did the Cubs win the World Series in 15 or 16?
16.
16. Okay. So it was the year after they won the World Series. They were struggling right around the cusp of the playoffs, but trying to make a move. They needed a pitcher. They had, if I'm not mistaken, the number two prospect in all of baseball, Eloy Jimenez. They also had a top five pitching prospect in Dylan Cease. The Cubs traded both of them to the White Sox for starter Jose Quintana, who would not pitch a single game with an ERA lower than three for the Cubs. His ERA for the year ended up being closer to five than three. He was terrible. I think the Cubs still did make the playoffs, but they definitely were a first-round exit. But Eloy Jimenez, he's out this year, but he was incredible his first year with the White Sox, and Cease has been a solid pitcher in the rotation for the last couple of years now. This is one of the worst trades ever because they traded two of the top-tier prospects that in the next couple of years, especially Jimenez, the White Sox expect to blossom into franchise-type players for a pitcher, an aged pitcher that wasn't even having that great of a season in the first place, to try and hold their team together to make a second World Series run and still weren't able to do it. One of the worst franchise moves ever in that case, because they could have had Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease right now, where and this mediocre Cubs team could be one of the best in baseball, but jumped the gun. And that's going to be a kind of a thing we talk about here. And then worst trades, jumping the gun a little bit. That one happens. Rough one for the Cubbies.
Brutal to say the least. I think the next one you got to get to is the wonderful Kyrie Irving trade. And this one was back when LeBron had left Cleveland. Cleveland was definitely not the Cleveland that was winning championships. Kyrie eventually said, "I want out," and was, you know, still is a superstar, but definitely not as much of a diva as we had thought. The original trade was Kyrie Irving Kyrie Irving went to the Celtics, and in return, the Cavs got Isaiah Thomas, who at that point was looking to get like an extension in his contract. Jay Crowder, Ante Zizic, and a 2018 first round pick from the Nets, because, you know, the Nets have to be thrown in there as well. Now, I bring this one up because I think this is one of the, there's tons of trades like this, but like one of the few that both teams definitely just, I think, got screwed out of in the end. It made both teams worse. Isaiah Thomas got hurt, wasn't the superstar LeBron needed, to say the least. And that kind of fell apart. Jay Crowder was okay. Jay Crowder was probably the best piece in this deal in the end.
And he got traded to Utah halfway through the year.
He did. I think they got like Dante Exum. No, they got Rodney Hood. That was the That's whole. That's right. And maybe Dante Exum as well. Now I think
they might have got another player in that. Yeah.
And then Isaiah Thomas got fire sailed for Jordan Clarkson, who was not the Jordan Clarkson sixth man at the time, and Larry Nance Jr. He got sent to the Lakers and maybe another person too. And Kyrie had two good years in the Celtics, one of them being marred with injury. The second one, a pretty bad playoff exit to the Bucks. Yeah, both teams somehow gotten worse and crippled both franchises pretty badly. LeBron left shortly thereafter. Not a good look. The Cavs, yeah, the Cavs made the postseason. Or sorry, it's made the finals, not even just the postseason, but I don't know. They were no match for the Warriors, obviously, but one of those that I think crippled both franchises for years to come. I mean, Cavs suck. The Celtics can't do anything with their assets. So in the end, I like mutually assured destruction, and I'm going to put that one on my list because it's one of my favorites.
I'm a big fan. I'm just thinking about that Cavs roster that started that next year, and it was so weird. They had Isaiah Thomas. They had Jay Crowder. They had Dwayne Wade. They had Derrick Rose. They had Derrick Williams. It was such Darren Williams. It was such an ugly, ugly team. And then they make these like four ridiculous moves of the offseason. They send away Wade. They send away Crowder. It was fantastic. It was atrocious. Oh, man. That's a great one, though. I'll move back into basketball here. This is a pretty simple deal. It was in 1996 on draft day. And Vlade Divac, who had been a solid NBA center for a few years, but he was at the end of his career. He was nearing the end. He was the older dude. I don't even think he played more than a handful of years after this trade. But if anybody knows what I'm talking about, the player he was traded for ended up being pretty good.
It was all right.
Came out of high school, 13th overall pick in the draft from the Hornets, traded to the Lakers. His name was Kobe Bryant, and he ended up winning 5 NBA championships. I don't know what you really want me to say here. This is just like I get it. You could never have guessed how good Kobe Bryant was going to be. I understand that. But geez, you end up trading an aged center for one of the greatest basketball players in the history of the sport. You got to look back on that one and just be like, wow, this we really screwed this one up, guys. We're gonna chalk that up to a mistake, miscommunication, something along those lines, and we are going to never do that again because wow, was that bad.
Gotta love the Charlotte Hornets.
Always. This was before MJ.
And then I think I gotta take it one more. Obviously, there are a ton of terrible trades, and you know, let us know what some of your least favorite are. I'm sure there's a lot of crippling ones for franchises. This is another good one. Julius Erving was traded for cash. That's it. What were they called at this point? They're the New York Nets. They weren't the Brooklyn Nets, or they weren't the New Jersey Nets. The New York Nets were part of the ABA. They got brought into the NBA, and they were struggling financially. And basically, the deal was, you know, you need to bring, I think it was like $3 million in cash. And they were like, we don't have that money. It's like, okay, you can either stop being a franchise or get that money. And finally, the New York Nets sent Julius Erving to the Philadelphia 76ers for that cash considerations. they continue to be a franchise, which, you know, I think is in the long run the best thing because, you know, they're looking quite good now. But the Sixers got Julius Erving and ended up winning a title in 1983. One of the greats in terms of being a small forward of all time. But that always brings up the question of, do you save your franchise or, you know, trade your best player of all time? Or sorry, it's one of the best small forwards of all time. Tough one, but I think the Nets made the right call. It's just one of those that looking back on it, like, wow, what if we could keep both?
Great. Yeah, what if we could have still been a team and had one of the best players? That would have been pretty nice. Sixers probably feel pretty good about that trade, though. Cash considerations essentially for a championship and an all-time player. That ain't bad.
Not bad.
I got one more for you here. It's a wacky one. It's one of my personal favorites, actually my absolute favorite trade of all time. So Kyle Korver was drafted a member of the New Jersey Nets, obviously now the Brooklyn Nets. And he was traded on draft day I don't know if it was on draft day, but his draft rights were traded to Philadelphia for cash considerations. Now, this happens a lot. Players get traded for cash all the time. But the story came out that the Nets ended up buying a fax machine with the money that they traded for Kyle Korver for. And so Kyle Korver triumphantly years later returned to his alma mater, Creighton, and told this lovely story about how his NBA career has outlasted the fax machine, who only had a 2-year career, very short time in the NBA. Kyle Korver, 13 plus years, if I'm not mistaken, in the NBA, a very good player, made a couple NBA, or at least one, made one NBA finals. I don't think he won with Cleveland, did he?
Well, he definitely didn't win with Cleveland. That was that wacky lineup we just talked about, Kyrie Irving. Yeah. He was on that team. He played with the Bucks, I think, in 2018 or 2019. Like, his career.
He was a Buck last year, I think.
I don't know. Oh, I think it was one of those, like, he was kind of on the roster but really didn't play, like, kind of like a DeMarcus Cousins on the Lakers sort of thing. But, yeah, I mean, his career definitely lasted longer than 2 years. The number I have in my head is 17, but honestly maybe even longer than that. But, yeah, Kyle Korver definitely outlasted that fax machine, both in terms of longevity and technology for that matter. So, honestly, gotta give him credit.
17 seasons. Well done.
I know my Sixers.
True.
I probably know that because
a long time though.
I know that because I think the Sixers every year it was like the Sixers wanted him and they just could never get him. And I'm like, come on, it was like X year veteran Kyle Korver, you know, potentially make it to the Sixers, all that. So
anyway, a little better than that. That, like you said, outdated piece of technology. So well done on Korver's part. Those are some of our worst trades of all time. Let us know if you guys have any other ones that we should add to this list. I'm going to do a couple more lists like these. These are kind of fun. Worst ever always brings smiles to the face.
The worst.
That's going to be it for us here this week. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. As always, we will be back with updated NHL and NBA playoff standings, any important baseball news, and maybe Julio wants to get traded again already. Who knows? He won't be wearing number 11, by the way. I meant to mention that earlier. AJ Brown offered it. He said no. So we'll let you know what number Julio wears. That'll be the big NFL news for next week.
He'll be wearing number 2.
Never mind. You'll be wearing number 2, and we'll have a fresh slate of information for you next week. Until then, guys, don't worry.
Your burning questions have been answered.
We got you. Until next week, guys, though, have a fantastic time and enjoy the episode.
Take care, everyone.